Good morning. My name is Oscar Allen. I'm a governing counselor for the epidemiology section. By profession, I'm the director of epidemiology and public health planning at the Rockland County Department of Health in New York. It's my honor and pleasure to moderate today's session, which is called County Health Rankings, Epidemiology in Action. I'm actually very well acquainted with the county health ranking systems, being from New York. We roughly have about 57 counties, give or take the New York City counties, which add up to 62. I come from a region where, with the most recent iteration of county health rankings, I have in my area of seven counties, one that ranked number one and the other that ranked pretty a little bit lower before number 62. So having that input and exposure, definitely I'm very pleased to sit down to hear today what each of our three speakers have in store. Our first presenter is Dr. Patrick Remington, and he's Associate Dean for Public Health and Professor of Population Health Sciences at the School of Medicine and Public Health, University of Wisconsin-Madison. He's a national leader in applying epidemiology to the interface between science and practice. His research to improve the methods for public health surveillance, data collection, analysis, and communication has culminated in his model being used nationally to engage communities in broad-based efforts to mobilize citizens towards actions that improve their health. Dr. Remington.
Great. Thank you, Oscar. I have to say that Oscar was pulled into action at the 11th hour, maybe the 9th hour. Jim Gaudino, an epidemiologist in Oregon, had asked that we bring this discussion to APHA, in particular to the epidemiology section, to focus less on the action part and more on the epidemiology. But he, at the last minute, due to state travel restrictions, was not able to attend. I also want to comment that due only to my incompetence in, although we can measure and rank the health of 3,000 counties, I have trouble loading presentations onto the website. And I loaded everything into one presentation as opposed to three. So those of you who are looking for this archive, you'll find all presentations, that of Bridget Bosky, Angela Russell, and mine, in one large file. For that, I apologize. We'll switch then and have the second and third presentation. I would like to pause between each for questions. And I have no financial relationships or commercial interest to disclose. So I'll begin first by acknowledging the entire team, not only Bridget and Angela here with me, but also Julie Willems-Van Dyke. Early on, Amanda Joveg helped us with this, and she's back on our team. Obviously, this project, although it was started in Wisconsin, is currently funded and supported extensively by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Just some of the players that are mentioned on the slide. And also our partners at CDC and NCHS, without whose help we wouldn't be able to do this, as well as ASTONHO, NNPHI, and the Dartmouth Institute. So let me begin talking about the model itself and how we conceived of ways to measure the health of the entire population. I have to say that I'd like to think that we came up with the idea, but we did not. We shamelessly copied the America's Health Ranking, which began in 1990 with, I'm looking to see if Tom Eckstein is here. Tom was one of the founders of the America's Health Ranking. This was done by then an insurance company, Minnesota Mutual, looking at actuarial data and predicting claims for insurance across the nation. And when they looked at the data that can be used to predict life insurance rates, they found that they had many of the determinants of health outcomes. And so they got together a group of experts and combined all of the information to come up with an overall summary measure of the health of each of the 50 states. When that first report was published in 1990, it garnered a lot of attention. Minnesota, I think not coincidentally, was ranked number one. They, after all, developed the model, and the developed coefficients that may have assured their first place ranking. Most notably was the fact that some states ranked very poorly, and those states got a lot of attention. This, again, was published in 1990, and then it has been published annually ever since. Well, in about 2000, we began to think about ways to take this success that was done at the state level and apply it within our own state of Wisconsin. I had just joined the university, and we wanted to elevate the visibility of population health data. In particular, my colleague Dave Kindig has been a strong advocate of population-based approaches to health improvement, and in fact, this model of Evans and Stoddard, the multiple determinants of population health. So we came together in 2003. We published the report, modeled again after the America's Health Ranking, but we did it a bit differently, and I'll talk about that in just a minute. Most importantly, when we decided to do this, rather than investing a lot of money and time in collecting new data, we wanted to use data that was widely available, free or low cost, and available for all our 72 counties. Well, fast forward then to today. This is our webpage, countyhealthrankings.org, and from our experience in Wisconsin, we were able to take that model and apply it to every state around the nation. And we'll come back and revisit this throughout our talk. The design of this web page is intentionally structured so that you can see our approach along the bottom, policies and programs influencing health factors and thereby influencing health outcomes. So why do county health rankings? Well, first of all, public health is, after all, assuring conditions in which people can be healthy. So how do we know we are living in conditions which are conducive to health? Where we live matters to our health. And also, just looking at data, not only across the nation, but within within states, you see some of the greatest disparities are not so much by age or race or gender, but by place, in particular in our state. And also, despite these tremendous variations, we found that there was relatively little attention in our state on the significant differences in the overall health by where you live. We provide in this model a measure of the overall health of each county, and each county gets a snapshot of that, not only the outcomes, but also the health factors or determinants that influence health. And it allows people at a glance to compare the overall health in their state so they see where they're doing well and areas that could improve. What we say is it's the first time ever, really, that people can compare the health of where they live to their neighbors or other counties in their state. We've been asked, why rank? Well, first of all, ranking is a way to take fairly complicated information, age-adjusted rates, standardized rates, rates per 100,000, percents, etc., and summarize it into something that you can easily understand and communicate. We actually, when we produced our first report in 2002, we didn't, at the last minute, we decided not to rank, and we used a quality improvement model like Consumer Reports, where the circles are either solid, meaning you're in the bottom quintile, or red, like foreign cars often earn in the automobile report, the April report. We released it at a conference in the fall of 2002, and although it was informative, one of my staff said he had a real hard time calling up journalists in the media and communicating the essence of the report. And he thought that, boy, if we just ranked, it would be a much easier way to talk about a place rather than a place being all red circles, that it's the healthiest place in the state. So we actually collected the reports, went back and changed that revision. We simply ranked the data, released it in January of 2003 to quite a bit of interest among the media. The other advantage of ranking using a summary measure is it draws attention to the fact that health is determined by many factors, not just health care and not just health behaviors, but the social and economic conditions in a community as well as the physical and built environment. The other thing that we've noticed is that by having this multiple determinant of health model is all of a sudden the health department is off the hook for many of the factors that lead to health. Education rates, for example, employment rates, access and quality to health care. Now, some health departments still get the call, which is, what are you doing about this horrible health ranking? But part of our work that Angela will describe is to communicate, in fact, that this model calls attention to the fact that it's not just a local health department problem, it's a community-wide issue. And this is the model from the Institute of Medicine 2002 report on the future of the public's health. And you can see in the center, as opposed to the old public health, which had governmental public health at the hub and all the players circling around, we've in effect moved governmental public health out of the hub to now a partner, and this new partnership model where the central theme is assuring conditions for population health, but it involves multiple key stakeholders. And in fact, if you look at those stakeholders, many of the measures in our model are directly related to their work. This is the logic model that we use for the county health rankings, and most of these arrows I feel are causal, that the if-then statement. I know that if we collect population-based data, we can in fact rank the health of counties. We know that when we do that, we get significant media attention. Those of you who've seen it in your state or tracked some of this nationally know that the media are very interested in sort of good news, bad news stories. We also know that local health officers and others use the report, and that leads to, in many places, broad community engagement. We obviously, I think the challenge for us and an area for research is once people get busy and talking and meeting about how to improve the overall health of their community, how do we know that evidence-based programs and policies are being implemented? If they're done, we know that health outcomes will improve, but I think part of our work over the next few years is to really support the engagement process and talk about better roadmaps to improving health outcomes. We've just published a report in the Journal of Public Health Management and Practice describing this model and looking at sort of the how and why. And you can see the figure in the upper right-hand corner. Well, this is, again, our simplified model that says the health of a community can be measured by the health outcomes, that it's influenced by determinants, risk factors, or health factors, and that what we do, in effect, the programs and policies influence those factors that then lead to health outcomes. This is, again, like a logic model, inputs affecting short and long-term outcomes. Obviously, the health factors, we base that on the social ecological model of population health, and that we look at measures of individual health, but go beyond that to look at measures related to families, communities, institutional factors, and societal factors. And we do it in four, what Dave Kindig calls buckets, or health factor groupings. Health behaviors, really, measures of individual behavior, going outside of that to clinical factors, social and economic factors, and the broad physical environment. And we've assigned weights to these, and be happy to talk about how these weights were determined. We looked at a number of factors that I'll mention. But health behaviors, beginning actually down in social and economic factors, we know that that not only influences health directly, but has a major influence on the quality and access of health care, on individuals' health behaviors. So some of the 40% of the weight is direct, and some directed through other factors. Health behaviors are important. Most research shows that health behaviors are some of the leading determinants of health: cigarette smoking, physical activity, and diet. Clinical care, we give 20% of the weight, and finally the physical environment, 10%. So how did we determine these weights? One is the historical perspective. I'm sure you've heard that the quote that says that healthcare is only responsible for 10% of the health of a community. If you actually hunt down the origin of that, it's somebody said it once and it stuck. Review of the literature. The literature actually is quite robust in this area, looking at determining certain outcomes, not the outcomes we use in our county health rankings, but measures of disease burden, preventable deaths. The WHO looked at this and looked at the contribution of health behaviors. A paper in AJPH just came out looking at social and economic factors as really the upstream determinants, estimated, I can't remember the total, but the number of deaths due to social and economic factors. We also looked within our own data at the ability to predict health outcomes, and found that, in fact, social and economic factors at the county level predict most of the variance in health outcomes, years of potential life lost and morbidity, but that behaviors also contributes. When we put them in a model simultaneously, the social and economic factors weight decreases, but still remains the leading contributing category, followed by behaviors, healthcare. The environment actually does not predict health outcomes. In fact, if anything, it is negatively correlated, so that places that are really healthy with respect to air, and in our state, water, tend to be poor rural areas. So bad health outcomes, nice, clean environment. We know from individual studies that environment determines health, and because of confounding and other reasons of in the analysis, ecologic fallacy, that it's not unexpected that we see that negative correlation. The other thing, when we looked at the weights, we used to use 10% for 6 years in Wisconsin. We used a 10% weight for healthcare, and anecdotally, we heard from healthcare providers saying, "Why should we be at the table if we only count 10%?" And then others who said, "How dare you limit our purview to only 10%? We could influence so much more." And so they wanted 50%. So we compromised and increased it to 20%. And in fact, when you do the modeling and you change the coefficients, it does, because they're so correlated with one another, it really doesn't affect the ranking much. So we tell people not to dwell so much on this specific question. Here's the historical perspective, and here's a question about rankings. So that back in the 30s and 50s, environmental conditions probably predicted most of the variation you saw in health prior to the sanitary revolution. In the 50s, increasing role of healthcare maybe had an increased contribution. Health behaviors, obviously, were widely recognized in the 70s to 90, and then most recently the contribution of social and economic conditions. So back in 65, there was no social gradient for smoking, for example. It was an equal opportunity behavior and killer, as they say. But today the gradient has appeared, so you would say the role of social and economic factors has changed over time. So again, it's a bit of a moving target. And Mike McGinnis had written early on the on this statement that genetic predispositions, about 30%. We don't include those because we look at things that are modifiable. And some people say that someday we can modify our genes, but we'll be patient on that prediction. But you see social circumstances, environment, behaviors, and shortfalls in medical care. There's the 10%. And this comes from a longstanding CDC estimate that deficiencies in the healthcare account for 10% of the variation in health. In fact, if you ask me to answer the quiz question, in fact, I'm working on an exam right now for my students. I'm going to borrow this question. In fact, it's all of the above. We combine all of the information to come up with the weights. And in fact, if you look at the top of the slide for health outcomes, mortality, and morbidity, there's no absolute way to combine those two. It seems to make sense that you want to live long and better so that mortality and morbidity are equally important. We count for the mortality, we use years of potential life lost. Again, not the only measure, but research has shown that this YPLL before 75 is a very good single summary measure of premature mortality. For morbidity, we use three measures from the BRFS: self-reported health, physical unhealthy, and mental unhealthy days. And when we went to the national program, we included low birth weight. It's widely available, and it's a measure, albeit not that specific or sensitive to conditions during prenatal period. For health behaviors, we include the three major contributors: tobacco, diet, and exercise. Diet and exercise is represented by rates of obesity, alcohol misuse, and unsafe sex. For clinical care, we look at two measures, equally weighted: access and quality of health care, social and economic factors, education, employment, income, family and social support, and community safety. And then physical environment, a combination of environmental quality and the built environment. So, I would like now to pause, maybe, if there are any questions on the model itself. Bridget Boski is going to talk about, sort of, once we have this conceptual model, how do we actually get from all the 25 or 30 measures for all 3,000 counties and put it all together?
Let me explain a little bit more.
Just for those who came in a little bit later, because it's one entire presentation, we're going to have these breaks in between each speaker. So as a result of that, we will entertain questions for Dr. Remington concerning his presentation at this point in time. You have a question?
Sounds like you had some pretty vociferous and effective advocates for increasing the allocation in the weighting to clinical interventions. If you restored
Oh, it's a good question. So if we went back to our old Wisconsin model, we had 40% of the weight in behaviors. And actually, if you think about the potential for healthcare, that healthcare systems that become accountable for population health, that might align incentives to improve not just the quality and access, but the third aim of the triple aim, that health systems could assume accountability for some of the variability in behaviors. So we used to have behaviors and social and economic factors accounting for 80%, 10% in health and healthcare, and 10% in the environment. Yes?
I'm wondering if they're all interrelated, and parsimony was your main goal, which would be the one that
So the question was if they're all intercorrelated and if our goal was parsimony. Yes, they're pretty much all correlated. And parsimony was a goal. You could certainly develop a model that included 1,000 of these variables. And you could get one that came down to things like child poverty. I forget which of the, so Bridget may be able to help on this answer, but there were some of those in the cluster that really predicted most of the variance, and we could have gone with a relatively simple model. However, we also include the need to communicate action. So although, let's say, child poverty could predict most of the variability seen in the social and economic factors, by not including education or employment or family and community issues, then it would just be a discussion about children in poverty and not about other factors.
I have a couple questions for you, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Well, my first question is this. Coming from a county health system, local health department, one of the things that we have been, and speaking personally from, we've been inundated with. At one point, the New York State Health Department decided to do rankings for our cancer incidence and mortality data. And unfortunately, my county had the unfortunate honor of being ranked number one. From that point, we have been pretty much branded for life with not being, when we speak to the public or others, not only being branded as the highest rates of cancer in the state, but the highest rates of cancer in the world. As a result of that experience, what say you with respect to your methodology, et cetera, to those counties who, or those localities who receive either the highest ranking and or the lowest ranking based on the methodology and the impact it would have on them for an extended period of time?
Well, I apologize for that. A couple of thoughts, and I think others can comment as they talk about the rest of the rankings. I think, first of all, there are unintended consequences, and you know, people who are ranked really low sometimes retreat and say this is just yet one more bad news story about our community. The term rank 'em and spank 'em was used, that you know, this happens in communities, you get ranked and then shame on you and you should do better. We've designed the system with, and Bridget will talk about the averaging of years of data, so that we are more precise in differentiating places that are healthy and unhealthy, so 7 years of risk factor data, 3 years of mortality data. So we're pretty confident when you see a rank that you know, the bottom handful of counties is much different than the top and maybe across quintiles. What we don't do, however, is explain those, we don't go down into the health outcomes and tease out the reasons you see poor health outcome ratings. And so there are cause-specific differences in mortality, injuries in some places, premature chronic disease, some places have high rates of tobacco use, some places poor infant health outcomes. So what we recommend is delving into the data and looking at specific components that make up, for example, poor health ranking. And you'll find in your county, as we have in every county in Wisconsin, that although some measures are really at the bottom, other measures are often at the top. So Menominee County is ranked dead last in health outcomes, high rates of substance abuse and poverty, but the measures of the built environment are quite good. 1 year they were the healthiest in the state. So they have an asset then to build on. But the unintended consequence is some of these communities get a reputation of being unhealthy places. Who wants to move there? What jobs would locate there? And we need to really spend time on providing, you know, how to make lemonade out of lemons, in effect.
Thank you.
One of the other unintended, especially for those that rank high, they are their immediate concern is that they will no longer get any type of federal or other state subsidies for some of their services because you guys are good. You don't need any more money to improve health. As a result of the concerns with you know, the rankings, another question that has come up quite frequently in among my colleagues pertains to the source of data when you try to find reasons to poo-poo being ranked poorly. One in particular is concerned with BRFIS. In New York State, for example, our birth is collected. It's landline only. There's no utilization of cell phones. Is this for your section? Okay. All right. Well, I'll take my question away from that. How about that? I'll reserve that. Are there any other questions from the floor? Yes.
So I'll answer that, and then I think it's a good segue to Dr. Brodsky's presentation. So the question was, these are indicators, but they don't measure all the depth and breadth of the health of the community. So for childhood injury, poisoning now is really important. What we consider this to be is a call to action. And the first action in many places to understand the details of what make up a healthy community. So I can the analogy I use is it's a Polaroid snapshot. What you really want is a 10 megapixel high resolution picture. For that you have to get your own data systems, look at cause of death by age, look at better sources of data, not just BRFS, but look at hospital-based or EMR-based information. So many communities, for example, Milwaukee County had stimulated detailed analysis within the county, within the city, even within neighborhoods. So I think it's a very crude measure of the overall health. And once you realize that you have an issue, it spurs further analysis. It also, and you'll look at the measures, they're not good for setting targets and monitoring change. These are really for differentiating healthy places from unhealthy places. If you want to do quality improvement in your community, you could select these measures, the constructs, but you really need to come up with better data to track improvement over time. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Dr. Remington. Next, presented how measures are selected for the county health rank, and we have Dr. Bridget Buskey. Dr. Buskey is a senior scientist and directs the Mobilize in Action Towards Community Health MATCH program at the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute. She is the deputy director for the county health rankings and project director for the county health roadmaps founded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. She joined the Population Health Institute in 2005 after working with the Center for Health Systems Research and Analysis at the University of Wisconsin-Madison for 15 years. She's received her PhD in industrial engineering with a focus on decision science and health systems from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. In addition, she has a master MHSA from the University of Michigan School of Public Health and a BA in economics and geography from Clark University in Worcester, Mass. Dr. Buskey.
Good morning, everybody. Now that Oscar has revealed that I am not an epidemiologist, I'm now even more intimidated talking to all of you. So, by the way, how many of you in the audience are epidemiologists? Okay. And before this session, how many of you had heard of the county health rankings? How many of you have been to the website? Okay. How many of you have looked at something other than data in the website? Yeah. So we got some more work to do there. So I am going to talk to you about the data part of the website and our methods and measures. The other hat that I wear is on a new initiative that also funded by the foundation that's called County Health Roadmaps, which is really the translational piece from taking the data and transferring it into action. So, and as sort of Pat was, or as we're saying, what we're doing in the County Health Rankings is a call to action. And as also was saying, our measures are not perfect, but that's not what we're going for, and we don't let perfection be the enemy of the good, and the good being people acting to improve health in their communities. So I have nothing to disclose. And I think that Pat's actually like covered half of my slides already during his presentation. That's always the problem with following him at a talk. Whenever possible, I try to go first. But anyway, so bear with me if some of this is repetitive. But the question came up about parsimony, and you'll see that the last bullet on this slide is that one of our fundamental principles in how we select our measures is that fewer measures are better than more. The media does not pay attention to huge, big, fat reports. We do actively seek media attention because we think that's what helps draw people to the table. And so, in doing so, we do try to focus on selecting those measures that reflect really important aspects of population health that can be improved. We try to use measures that have been used by others that have been shown to be valid and reliable. Obviously, having the data available at the county level is also really important. We follow where we can the America's Health Rankings so that they, for those who want to go from the state level down to the county level, can try to do so. But there are way more measures available for states than there are for counties, so it's not always a one-to-one. All of the data that we use is either available for free or we just pay a very low cost to use it. And we try to use as up-to-date data as we can, but as you all know, that's not always possible. So Pat actually already went over the five main measures that we use to reflect the health outcomes in a community. And these measures either come from the National Center for Health Statistics or they come from the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System. But you will notice that for all of these measures, in order to be able to rank as many counties in the nation as possible, we have to use multiple years because so many counties have smaller populations where there just isn't sufficient data. So for mortality, we average 3 years' worth of data, but when we're dealing with the Burfest data, we actually have to use 7 years of data. And we still, the CDC still suppresses data for quite a few counties, even when we do that. We use years of potential life lost. We get suggestions that maybe we should be using life expectancy instead, and actually ideally we'd like to use healthy life expectancy, but that is not as sensitive to change. Also, we don't do the calculations. So in our model, it says population health. In our logic model, it said population health data collected. It's collected, but not by us. We accumulate it from others who have collected the data, and in many cases, who have also actually done the calculations for us. So premature death is we do rate that at weighted at 50%. When we're choosing our weighting, in addition to just doing the weights across the four general areas within the individual sections, we also consider the reliability and the importance of a particular measure as to how much weight that we give it. And so mortality data is more reliable than survey-based data, and so we will tend to give that one, that kind of source, a higher weight. We use the three measures from Burfest to reflect health-related quality of life. We used to just use in Wisconsin poor or fair health, but what you find is that people don't realize that the underlying question there, that includes or can include both physical and mental health. And so to emphasize the fact that health is not just about physical health, that we added the two additional measures for physically unhealthy days and also mentally unhealthy days. Adding those two measures doesn't really do much to change rankings, but it really helps with the communication, and that's what Angela is going to talk more about in general. We're doing what we do in order to communicate with a broad audience. So in the health behaviors section, so we have five measures in health outcomes. Across all of the health factors, we have 23 measures. Pat, that makes 28 measures. Well, quiz you again later on that one, Pat. But then we'll go ahead and change it in 2012 just to confuse him further. So on that note, actually, we are committed to keeping our health outcomes measures the same from year to year. But as we work within the health factor areas, if we find better measures at the county level become available, we will add those. And so there won't be quite the same consistency across our health factors that we have in health outcomes. So yes, BERFUS data, with its pluses and minuses, is what we rely on for our smoking measures, our measure of excessive drinking, and then the adult obesity measure that we use is actually, it's originally derived from the BERFUS data, but CDC does modeling in order to come up with estimates for counties that they wouldn't necessarily report on. So we use their modeled estimates because that way we end up with an obesity measure for every county. Is it a great modeling effort? It's as good as it can be. It's got its pros and its cons, but the point is that we are trying to communicate, and obviously we need to be communicating about what's going on in obesity in as many counties as we can. For alcohol use, we use a drinking measure, and then you'll see motor vehicle crash death rate here, and this is as a proxy for drunk driving. It's not an exact one-to-one relationship, because only about half of crashes are due to alcohol, but again, it's for the communication value that it isn't just about excessive drinking, but it's what happens when people drink that we include that one in there too. Unsafe sex, we have a couple of measures. Again, teen birth rate as a proxy for failure to use birth control methods. And then also we report on chlamydia rates. We talk about it, though, when we talk with the media, we use the general term of STIs, because otherwise, if we just say chlamydia, we find that all the conversation is just around chlamydia, and that's not really what our point is, but we do, I mean, all of the details of what we report and the years and the data sources are all on our website, but communication is also really important. In the area of clinical care, we measure both access to care and quality of care. Our quality of care measures are provided to us by the Dartmouth Institute. They normally do their reporting by a hospital service area or a hospital referral region, but we have worked with them for them to develop these county level estimates for us. All of these three measures that we use are all based on Medicare data, which is a downside, because that's only addressing the population 65 and above, but that's the one national source of healthcare data that is available to us. Within states, there are additional measures available, but not consistently across all the states. I don't know if Pat mentioned this, but when we do our rankings, we are doing them all within state, but because we're working with 50 states, we use national data sources. When we first were talking to the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation about taking our Wisconsin model to other states, Pat and I first proposed to them, well, maybe in year one we could add 5 states, and then the following year we'd add 5 more states, and the third year we'd add 5 more, so by the end we would be ranking in 16 states. That was based on our premise, was that in Wisconsin we were using Wisconsin specific data sources, and we thought, well, a 5 times increase in effort each year was about all we could handle. But Jim Marks, the Senior Vice President for Health at the Foundation, told Pat and I on a phone call, nope, sorry, that 5 per year addition isn't going to do it. I want you to rank all the health in all 50 states after year one. So after we picked ourselves up off the floor from that request, then we had to think about, okay, if we're going to have to do all 50 states at once, we are going to have to go to these national data sources. There was no way that we could be in contact with each of the 50 states figuring out what data was available, and so that's why we went with this this national approach. But what we are now doing and making available is, although our rankings are constructed based on these national data sources, we have in the website additional measures section, and there a number of states have supplied us with some state-specific measures, and we encourage that, and we have the capacity now. We didn't the first year we started, but we do have the capacity now to load state-specific measures for counties within each state. And that is actually in the case of New York, to address Oscar's question about the BRFUS data. So yeah, in New York State, they have a much larger sample size than is available in other places, and they can come up with single-year county-level estimates. And we encourage the state of New York to provide those to us so that we can upload them onto the site. The state of Florida has done that, and so... We haven't yet gone to changing our actual what we use in the rankings, but we at least can make those available. For the point that Pat was saying was that is that our data is just a starting point, and we encourage all communities to drill down beyond what we're providing to use, you know, better, more local data. So social and economic factors. Highest weighted section of our model, as Pat pointed out. We have measures of high school graduation rates that last year came from the National Center for Education Statistics. This year we've been doing a little more work. We think that the high school graduation rates are such an important measure that we have been gathering some state-specific measures for this coming release. We used to report in Wisconsin on number of people completing college degrees, who had completed a college degree, but the more we thought about it and our motivation to have more modifiable factors, we decided that, and because there is a gradient, so that the more education you get, the more healthier you're likely to be, we decided that we would report on individuals who have at least some college, because, it, you know, realistically, somebody at my age would not be likely to go back to school and complete an entire college degree, although some people do. But for someone to go out and take a few college courses, that's feasible, plausible, and you know, to be encouraged at any age level. So we use unemployment statistics from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. As Pat mentioned, children in poverty. We use, these are derived from the census's small area income and poverty estimates. We have this measure of inadequate social support that comes from BRFUS. It's a little bit of a squishy measure for, you know, those of you who are, you know, true traditional epidemiologists, but it really gives the sense, as is known in the literature, that for individuals that are connected to others, that their health is going to be better than those who are more isolated. So, single-parent households, another measure from the American Community Survey. When we first set out doing this, we had to rely on measures from the census, but now that the American Community Survey is fully up and running, they do now provide county-level estimates based on 5 years of the survey, but for all counties now in the U.S. And so where we used to have to report every year, we just keep reporting the same census figures. Now these American Community Survey estimates are available, and they are updated each year. Unfortunately for us, they don't publish them until well into December. And for us, when we're trying to make an early in the next year release, it gets a little dicey. I have to tell a few people that now you don't need to have holidays at the end of the year. You can need to process the ACS measures for us instead. Okay, I don't quite do that. Although last year I wouldn't let our grad students go on spring break because that was right before our release time. So. And I never let Angela go anywhere except traveling to talk about the county health rankings. So that's her vacation time. Community safety is the last area that we cover. And here is where we actually do not use the same measure in all states. We use violent crime measures where they are available from the FBI, but that's actually only for about half of the states in the U.S., and so for the other half we use as a proxy, we use deaths due to homicide as a measure of violent crime. Finally, the physical environment section. This is our most difficult area to measure and to find, or to find county-level measures. In terms of air quality, the CDC has collaborated with the EPA to come up with modeled estimates. Many of you know that a lot of counties don't actually have air quality monitors, and so they have derived these estimates. We probably get more questions via our website about these air quality measures than we do about any other single measure. We know they're not perfect, but again, it's about communicating. And so we do what we can here in reporting these measures. Similarly, in the built environment, we will admit that these are not the greatest measures either here that we use. The access to healthy foods measure is the percent of zip codes in a county that have a grocery store or a farmer's market with fresh produce available. Zip code is not first of all, zip codes are not unique to counties, and they are not the greatest measure. The most sparsely populated an area, there'll only be one zip code in a county. This is not the ideal. We are working on some enhancements in this area. Some more data is coming out that we are going to be able to use, but I'm not quite competent enough that we have it yet to tell you what we're doing, but watch for some improvements there. And then lastly, access to recreational facilities. This is also not a good measure, because this is based off county business data, and so this is businesses with a business code that falls into a certain category. And we all know that there's ways to get exercise that do not involve going to a paid gym or something like that. But it's the messaging that we're trying to get across here, is that neighborhoods need to be safe, they need to have green space, sidewalks, and things like that, and there is no county-level measure of sidewalks or access to green space yet that we've been able to come across. So the recreational facilities measure is mostly paid recreational facilities, although it doesn't actually include even all of those. It doesn't, for example, include YMCAs, which are a source of exercise facilities. The reason we don't include them is that YMCAs fall into a different category. We use the industry classification codes to select them, and they fall into a different industry classification. And they fall into the same category as nudist camps and pool halls and a few other things. So, yeah. So, So hence we do not, it does, our measure does not include YMCAs. Now, if you want to have a discussion about whether or not nudist camps and pool halls do consider recreational facilities that would lead to improved health, we can have that discussion. But you can have that discussion with Pat or Angela, not me. So, Pat gets that one? Yeah, that's right. So we have all those measures. What do we do with them in terms of compiling the rankings? Well, we actually calculate 8 different ranks. We rank on the health outcomes of each county and on the health factors, and then we also rank on the components. So we rank on mortality, morbidity, and then on behaviors, clinical care, social and economic factors, and the environment. How do we do this? First of all, we standardize all our measures into Z-scores, and we do that within state because our rankings are within state. Then we apply the weights to each of our measures, and then we sum these weighted Z-scores for the measures within each of the components that we're going to rank. And then we order the sum scores within each state, and rank of number one being the healthiest. And we actually have to specify that. The number of times that we'll get a question on the website is now, is number one the healthiest or the least healthy? So it may seem like I'm stating the obvious, but no, it's not obvious to people. So the way that this actually works out is an example from our own Dane County in Wisconsin, which for the record has never been ranked number one in Wisconsin. So although Minnesota came out number one in America's health rankings, our own county does not. So we have a value for each measure. We convert it to a Z-score. We times it by its weight. That we do the same thing for the other measures in the category. And then we sum those Z-scores and then have all the county listings and rank them in, and list them in order. And so then you end up in Dane County with a rank of 6 out of 72 for mortality and 31 for morbidity. We also sum those scores then to come up with the overall health outcomes score. And for health outcomes overall, our county comes in at number 10 for health outcomes. So a few more of the details about how we do this. So in order for us to rank a county, we do require that we have the data for premature death for the YPLL measure. If that's missing, then we don't rank a county, and that ends up with this other 3,100 plus counties. We are able to rank all but about 125 of the counties in the U.S. Now, that doesn't mean just because they have that health outcomes measure that they have data for all the other measures. So we do have a number of places with missing elements, and what we do here, we've thought long and hard about this and what the best way to do this is, and we currently are just assigning the state mean in place of a missing value in order to be able to then do the ranking calculations. It's not the perfect answer, but the moment we take counties out of the rankings, we're taking away the opportunity for conversation. We're taking away the call to action. And so we try to include and rank as many counties as we can. Obviously, the reliability of our measures differs from measure to measure. As I mentioned earlier, we use multiple years of data to increase reliability. And then we take a look at the Z-scores. And if we have Z-scores at 3.0 plus or minus at that level or higher, and it's a county with a smaller population, then we truncate the Z-score in order to calculate their ranks. We used to truncate all Z-scores at 3.0, but then we realized in the heavily populated areas that a Z-score of greater than 3.0 could actually be truth as opposed to variation due to sample size, and so we only truncate them in the smaller populated areas. And then for people who are drilling down within our website and understanding more, we try to emphasize the fact that yes, these measures do have variation to them, and we report both the sample size to give an indication of reliability, and we report margin of errors as well. And this is how this appears on a particular county snapshot. You'll see the premature death measure there, then you'll see the error margin. And then we also report this national benchmark. And this goes to an earlier question about the if you're appearing as the healthiest county, that can have implications for you. But the truth is that even if you're the healthiest county in your state, you may not be as healthy as other places across the country. So we report this national benchmark, which is the point at which only 10% of counties in the U.S. do better than that level. And so we find that when we're talking to these higher-ranked counties, so this one in particular in Maine shows that their premature death rate is 5,900, but that's above the national benchmark. So although they're doing really well within their state, they could do better. Every county has opportunities for improvement in some areas. Finally, I would like to draw your attention to an important part of our website that we just developed last year, and this is a guide to drilling down within the data. As we've said, we report national data, but often within states there is a lot more information available. once a community looks at their snapshot, we really encourage them to go and delve down further and figure out exactly what's happening. And we provide a guide. When you page down, we have state-specific data sources. If you're from a state and you've been on the website and you think you have additional county-level data sources that we're not capturing, I would love to hear about those from you. So, and now with that, I will take some questions.
Yes.
Right. Is there a way to know if the value is included or not when you just look at the slide?
I'm sorry, if the value is...
Is there a way to know whether you took the state mean for a value that was missing?
When you, not from the county snapshot, but when you, if you go on a particular... Let me, I don't know if I can back up. Oh, I can't back up. If you... go to drill down on it, that you can go on a measure name, and then you come up with all the values for the state, and you actually can see the Z, you can see the Z scores, so then you can see that the Z score is zero, and that implies that we've used the state mean there. So. There were not. There were other constructs that we considered, but we couldn't find county-level measures. So, and we're really open to suggestion. If anybody knows of county-level data sources in that area, we'd love to hear about it. Not specifically, but in terms of using GIS, we're actually on the third year now of our grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and we're going to be up for renewal. And one of the things that we're contemplating is whether or not to ask for additional resources so that we can delve more in using more in GIS tools. No, and I was supposed to have dinner the other night with my contact from NCHS, where we have fascinating dinners where we discuss the intricacies of data, and that would have been when we would have talked about it, but she unfortunately had a family emergency, so I still have to have that conversation. So.
That's a good question.
You should never be afraid to be in a room with epidemiologists. That's how enlightening conversation starts. Part of the question I had, and maybe I'll fall the same victim of being jumping to the next group, but with translational research, and I understand, as you mentioned with your methodology, your measures, the focus is less on how intricate we can get into the muddy details and data, but how we can then take that and hopefully impart some type of action step. One of the responses that I've often got with respect to the physical environment component, as you mentioned, there's a dearth of, or a lack thereof, of the ability to get more data on a county level. But at a county level, oftentimes we're faced with the fact that the physical environment we don't necessarily have control over. For example, planning departments and other agencies, transportation departments may develop their comprehensive plans, and there's no input at all with respect to the health departments, who are predominantly concerned with the day-to-day activities and prevention and maintenance of health. So how do you jump over that deficiency, and is this a call for action in the sense of saying, when other agencies where county health departments have no control over, can this be used as an opportunity to say, here, the nice folks of Wisconsin have said, we have a right to sit at the table, and here's proof.
The answer to your question is yes, absolutely, this can be done in that way. And actually, there's a session going on that's running concurrent with this one where the mayor of Wyandotte County in Kansas is talking about work that they have been doing there, following on from the rankings, and they absolutely have brought planning to the table with the public health people and planning, and Angela's done works with talking to some of the planning organizations as well, and they do see themselves now in our model, and they're beginning to understand that they play a role in health as well. And so we've got a long way to go, but we're starting in that process.
Are there any other questions from the floor?
Thank you, Dr.
Our third presenter is Ms. Angela Russell. Angela is the community engagement lead of the County Health Rankings Project. As a community engagement lead, she helps with communications and community engagement activities for the Rankings Project, providing training and technical assistance to local communities throughout the nation on CHR, and strategies to improve community health and assisting with research regarding community health improvement. Angela comes to the Population Health Institute with 10 years of professional experience involving external affairs and outreach, communications, and research and evaluation. Angela.
Thanks. What my bio doesn't say is that the reason I'm in public health is because of Dr. Remington. That's a long time ago. What I like to do at the start of my presentations is to see if anyone has any questions before I start. Are there pressing questions that you have about communicating data? I can have Bridget talk about it, but I think the communication and community engagement is a key aspect of the renewal, not just the data. But you can go more.
And I should clarify, we're up for renewal, but if you ask our program officer, we ask what to say when people ask us how long we're going to be doing this for or how long the foundation is going to be doing this. And the current answer from the foundation is that the county health rankings will be released every year. And they are very committed to keeping this as an ongoing activity.
Great, thanks. So what I'm going to talk about a little bit is communicating results. I don't have any financial relationships to disclose. This is the logic model that Dr. Remington presented earlier. The reason why we do this is because we want improved health outcomes in every county across the nation. So we have a lot of powerful data, a lot of interesting data, but the data comes and is powerful once we communicate it. So the question is, how do we go from this, SAS, coding, and Excel spreadsheets? I don't know if you've ever tried to present an Excel spreadsheet to a policymaker. It doesn't really work. To getting headlines. So we've gotten great headlines across the country. These are some of our local headlines that we've gotten. But we've also been in places such as the Wall Street Journal. Bridget was in the Wall Street Journal earlier this year, the New York Times, People Magazine. And a lot of our effort is really around communicating data. So how do we do this? Communicating our results is a key part of what we do. The first thing that we do is develop our key messages. So we have all of this data. We have an annual media event. But before we even get to the media event, we work really hard to develop our key messages. And I'll go over some of those key messages in a moment. We have our annual media event every year, and then a series of other media events throughout the year. So we come out with our data in the spring. Mark your calendars for the end of March of 2012. That's when we'll be coming out with the 2012 data. We have this huge media event, and then that gets a lot of traction. We have a good website. How many of you have been to the website? Most of you. And you've all been to the Take Action section, right? I'll get to that. I'll give an example of what's in there. A lot of what we do in terms of communicating results is also a part of having really good partners. So, Oscar, you mentioned about transportation. How do we get the transportation and urban planners involved? A lot of what I do is trying to develop those key partnerships at the nationwide level so they can get down to the local-wide, at the local level. An example of that is that National Area Metropolitan Planning Organization. Is anyone familiar with that group? They have infused public health into their 25-year transportation plan. Just, I wanted to get at kind of how do we talk to folks. They know that public health is important. They just need to have the data in front of them to say what's going well and where can we help. So keeping our partners engaged is very important, and then we stay connected with folks throughout the year. So we have social media, Facebook. Anyone like us on Facebook? Yeah. Yeah. We've got a Twitter page. You can follow us on Twitter. We've got newsletters and webinars, and then we share stories as well. So these are the key elements that we use to communicate our results. So our key messages, the number one message you've probably heard a lot at this conference is that where you live, learn, work, and play matters to your health. That's the number one thing that I talk to a reporter about when they call and ask about the county health rankings. The second thing, Bridget showed you a little snapshot of a community profile, I think it was Hancock, Maine. With these county snapshots, they tell you where a community is doing well and where there are opportunities for improvement. One of the things that Dr. Remington likes to say, and I've copied him, is that just like you or I go to the doctor every year for our annual checkup, this is the county's annual checkup. The doctor would tell me, well, you may need to look at your weight or get more physical activity or whatever. I say, yeah. And do it, of course. This is the same thing for community leaders. This is where you're doing well. You may have a very low teen birth rate, but you have a lot of adult smoking, for example. You may need to address that. Or your high school graduation rate needs to be improved. So it's a community checkup. And then the last very important thing that it tells us is that it really takes everyone working together. So you see our take action model. For a long time, we, in terms of improving community health, we thought it was just public health practitioners, that it was our role to improve the health of a community, or just the medical profession. But we know, and our data tells us, that it really takes everyone working together. It takes public health, it takes the clinicians, but it also takes key policymakers, educators, philanthropy, and government to really make a difference in improving the health of a community over time. And I talk really fast, so if you have any questions as I'm talking, just let me know. So this is the take action portion of our website. I mentioned that our website is a key communication vehicle for what we do. I think it was either Bridget or Pat that showed you the map earlier. That's the home page, and you can click on a state and you can go into your county. But this is the take action section, and what's really great about this section is, in addition to you can identify who you are, we would all be public health professionals, you could be an educator, grant maker, whatever. You click on a section, and then it gives you specific action steps and ideas of what you can do in your local community to help turn things around. The other thing that I wanted to point out about our website, so we have our approach, which Pat and Bridget reviewed. We've got the ranking method, so if you actually want the specific formulas that we do use for ranking, that's on there, as is our national data set. So if you want to play around with our data, you can download that at the ranking method section. The action step section, which I just reviewed with you, but the your story section is my personal favorite. It has two components. One component is we've profiled about 13 different communities across the nation that have used the county health rankings to take action, and they're great stories. The other component of that section is that we're really inviting other people to tell us your story. So if you have a good example of what you're doing with the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, we want to hear about it. If you have examples of what you're doing in your local community, we want to hear about it. So that's a component of that section as well. And I'm just highlighting the take action. All right, again, this is our take action model. I just want to see, how many of you have worked with anyone else outside of public health on this take action model? And what have you done? Oscar wants to answer. You're the overachiever in the group.
Yeah, well, no.
He admitted to being the overachiever in the group.
Well, I'm sorry. I haven't necessarily used the take action model, but used the map model instead.
Yep.
So a similar construct. Engage community organizations, collaboratives, the entire health system, providers, even insurers, and addressing ways we can improve our health.
And how did you do that? Because you're an epidemiologist, so what did you do?
I'm also, unfortunately, the one in charge of writing the community health assessment for my county, so I had to engage and do focus groups and get them to the table.
Okay, great. So rather than saying unfortunately, you had the opportunity to, right?
A lot of hats.
I used to work in politics, so I like to spin things around a little bit here and there. All right. So I don't know if you can see this, but this is an example of, this is our model, which you saw earlier, but what it has on the far right side are different policy examples that could be implemented to address a particular issue. So education, can you all see the education line? An example of improving high school graduation rates over time is ensuring that your children in your community have access to high quality early childhood programs. Now, I know that there are a lot of states that have a quality rating system for their child care where you can go in and assess how high the quality of the particular child care is. Maybe connecting with that, increasing the minimum wage or having paid family medical leave to improve income. Tobacco use, we know that there are a lot of states that have clean indoor air policies now. It's another way to address tobacco use in states. So these are just examples of what folks can do. And again, that there's more examples on our website of what folks can do to take action at the local level. And so Bridget mentioned briefly that Mayor Joe Reardon of Wyandotte, Kansas, is currently giving a session on the county health rankings and what he's done. But Wyandotte, Kansas is right over here. And it's got the Kansas City, the Kansas portion of the Kansas City in their county. And when the county health rankings came out, they were ranked the least healthy county. It's an opportunity, right? That's what I like to see it, think of it as. And I'll get back to this, my other thought in just a second. So what he did is he created these Healthy Communities Initiative, and he had five different aspects of it that he wanted to address, one of them being access to healthy foods. And I think that this is incredible. One of the things that he was able to do as a mayor was he saw that access to healthy foods was an issue. He drilled down a little deeper, found a neighborhood that didn't have access to healthy food in over 35 years, and worked to create a neighborhood grocery store that didn't have one in over 35 years. And that's just an amazing story of how data can be used to really create great change. This is my contact information if you have more questions or want to contact me. The other thing that I wanted to address with when Oscar had mentioned, what do you do if you're ranked the least healthy county or the healthiest county? We had another example of a county that was ranked the least healthy county last year. It was Bullock County, Alabama. Anyone familiar with Bullock County, Alabama? They are the least healthy county in Alabama, and they just said, wow, we need to do something about this. And they wanted to have an emergency town hall meeting. So they had an emergency town hall meeting. They Skyped me in to explain the data. But the one thing that I really wanted to stress is that there was an area that they were doing well, and they shouldn't lose that. They had a lot of challenges. But the area that they were doing well was they had a very low rate of excessive drinking, just like Wisconsin. Just joking. We have a horrible rate of excessive drinking. But the reason I point that out is even if you're the lowest ranking county, it's important to know where your opportunities for improvement are, but it's also important to know where you're doing well. Same thing for the healthiest county in a state. There are always areas for improvement, and Bridget pointed that out in terms of comparing to the national benchmark. So I know I went through this pretty quickly, but do you have any questions on communicating data? I think Pat and Bridget have both talked about it, that our data is a starting point.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys want to. I say it's a starting point, and you really have to work with others in your local community to drill down and find that other information. And so sometimes it's not necessarily the public health department that has the information that you need. Sometimes it's your parks department or your transportation department. Sometimes your United Way will have more information. But I think that's, again, where we have to work together with other folks and that it's not always on us. Us meaning the public health profession.
Hi, do you have any type of report for tracking changes or improvements of individual counties over multiple years? And secondly, given that these reports are intended to be put out every year with updates of, you know, how, you know, yearly current information, you're obviously depending on a lot of other data collection facilities such as BRFSS. If that funding becomes compromised for those collection utilities, given the fragility of our current economy and everything else, where does this program see itself going without the raw data that you need for the entire project?
Okay. I'll try to answer one part of your question, then hand it over to Bridget and or Pat. But in terms of using the rankings for trends, we don't recommend that at all. An example of that, and I talk to a lot of communities about this, they're like, we really, really want to improve our ranking. We want to be number one in the state or whatever, improve it just a little bit. But if every county in your state is improving at the same rate, your rank isn't going to change. So it really, and Pat mentioned this earlier, it's a starting point. It's really, you have to use other indicators to measure trends over time. But in terms of the other data sources.
Well, I think the best defense for cutting a program is widespread use. I can't imagine that there wouldn't be, significant pushback if the, if the data infrastructure for a nationwide system was compromised. So we think by actually using the BRFS as an example, we're increasing its likelihood to continue. So we are reliant. I mean, it is true that if you look at the measures, morbidity and risk factors are critical in the model, and we get it from the BRFS. It's a good point.
A little bit adding to that, I know you had asked, and especially Bridget, with respect to if other data sources are available. I most recently just concluded a grant project with, it's called Regional Health Planning for seven counties in my region. And we tried to collect data, roughly about 7,000 data points from all seven counties, residents across all the spectrum of those seven counties, looking for information more than what's contained in the BRFSS and census, et cetera. For example, most people, you're asked a question, do you have health insurance? Well, we ask whether or not your health insurance covers mental health, covers dental, and covers other issues. We also try to not only ask them their weight, but we also ask, what their self-reported weight was. And of course, there are a lot of people who were obese that felt that they were perfectly fine. So I guess the point is, with data points like this, or data elements or indicators, which a local health department or a region may find to be of greater utility, and that's not a judgment statement, for their local uses, is there the opportunity with a tangential approach or a forward-thinking approach for you guys doing this on an annual basis, how much of their local data can be included in your overall approach here, especially seeing that you may not have data that may be collectible with the same level of elements across the entire state, region, or even the nation?
Our current capacity for including additional local data on our website, we're not quite there. We can link to state data sets. I'm hoping not in 2012, but in 2013, we will increase our capacity so that on local county pages, if we know of additional data sources, we can link directly to those. But that's the kind of data that we're talking about. Communities going looking for their data drill down efforts, and over time, hopefully, we can link them to it. So,
I liked the seven different categories of IMA that user typing, that typology is good. Question is about, since they are different groups of people, whether you've done formal usability, website usability studies in each of the different users groups and what you found different.
Sorry, I know you asked.
Been bumped up.
I'm the web queen or something. So we are actually just doing our first round of any usability testing on the website. And in fact, yesterday we were doing some in the exhibit hall with public health users here. We were doing it on our mobile version of the site. So we have just we're just starting that process. We did talk about trying to actually do what you're suggesting and find people from each of those audiences, but we're using up some residual budget to do this, and we couldn't quite swing it this time around, but it's absolutely a good idea. So
I think I'll grab an Angela. Maybe she can't bump this one up. You kind of mentioned actively engaging or actively seeking media attention. And oftentimes, as scientists, applied and academic, et cetera, practical, theoretical, we suffer from doing that at times. So, for example, as you showed in your slide sets, you know, we may find something that's novel that has promising, you know, value, whereas when you bring the media into it, though you may have your talking points, they themselves choose what they want to present. For example, as a local health department, we knew we had advanced access to the first iteration of the CHR, and only I can tell you waking up in the morning and watching the morning news and hearing the worst counties you can live in New York, you know, or right in our area. And it's that kind of a thing where, you know, they select things that is for their own best interest. So how do you dance that, or how do you dance that line, especially with respect to actively looking to engage media in getting our health messages out there?
I think that's a great question, and it is a dance. I like that you refer to it as a dance. One of the things that I think, I'm going to take different parts of the question. Number one is getting your media your message out as scientists. Sometimes we know what we're saying, but no one else in the world has any idea on what we're saying. So having a good sounding board that's not a epidemiologist or not a scientist could be helpful. So some of the things that I like to do is I'll talk to my husband. He's not in sciences, and he's tired of hearing about the county health rankings in general because I talk about it a lot. But that's beside the point. I'll use him as a sounding board, or I'll use some of my non-university friends. And I have a lot of friends who've been in politics, and I just realized that my necklace fell in my shirt, sorry, who are in politics, and they are great sounding boards because they'll say, I have no idea what you just said. So that's helpful. In terms of being proactive with media, I think doing press releases is a good thing, but if you really want to shape the story, I think getting in front of the editorial board is a better method or something to do in addition, because you've got the editor there, not just the writer, and it helps shape your message a little bit more. But they do always have their agenda, and sometimes it is the headline of the worst county that gets people to start acting.
One of the things that we've begun to do, we've actually started to employ the social media market on our own, kind of a direct-to-consumer approach, because sometimes our press releases don't get taken up, and as a result, you know, we're dealing with the differential. I was a little bit remiss, forgive me, folks, for not mentioning this, but I, in my haste to get her up here to speak, I forgot to mention her Angela's credentials. She did receive her Master of Science in Population Health with a focus on EPI and health policy at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, and she's also a Bachelor of Science, major in biochem, and a minor in healthcare studies from Beloit College. Are there any additional questions from the floor? With that, yes. Go ahead, doctor.
Yeah, the question about the burden of disease, why not explore some other indicators?
Meaning the health outcomes?
Yes, and the morbidity.
Well, that gets back to the question, I think, about parsimony. We wanted to keep the model simple to begin the conversation.
I think it's a great opportunity. In fact, maybe I'll close by saying one of the things that happened in Wisconsin over 6 years is we get these calls from people upset, people who looked into the data and found problems, and we'd have a dialogue and we'd say, you know, you're right, that's a good idea. We shouldn't use that indicator because it's not fair for people living in rural communities. I think in the area of our health outcomes, we probably have too much parsimony. I think if you look at the state health rankings, they look at cancer, heart disease, you know, and people do think about that from a burden perspective. So we've thought about measures of disease burden. Here's the unfortunate part, is that that burden is often non-fatal burden, and there just aren't very good data systems. It's you know, so it's not in commercial databases. And so I think that's a direction to go to enhance the measure of health outcomes, to really look at, you know, the disease, the end stage quality of life issues. So, you know, we've talked about having a drill down that when you click on YPLL, it actually, you know, expands into cause and age specific burden and or under morbidity, you have disease morbidity, because that's, and healthcare costs is another example. Those are sort of downstream costs. So I just encourage people, maybe in closing, to you see Angela's email there. She's not the only one. Actually, if you go to countyhealthrankings.org, there's a click to contact us. Please call us if you have ideas in your state on how to improve this system. It won't get better if we don't hear from you. And we have used some state partners to try and improve not just the data, but communication. So look forward to working with you. And thanks, Oscar, again.
No problem.
With that said, we definitely thank you for your patient time and interest. And thanks to our panel, Patrick, Bridget, and Angela. And have an exceedingly wonderful rest of the conference. Thank you.